Welcome back. It is another edition of Inside Boxing Live. It is Dan Canobio. It is Chris Algieri, and we are powered by PPV.com. We have a huge PPV.com week coming up next week. Manny Pacquiao is stepping back into the ring at age 46, going up against Mario Barrios. We got the Fandora Zoo rematch and a really good card as well. We're going to be out there getting content. Chris is going to be doing his stuff, talking with Pacquiao. I'll be talking with Pacquiao, Freddie Roach, everyone. We'll be in the live interactive chat. I'll be on the broadcast for DraftKings, the whole nine, next week. And then you can order along with us on PPV.com to your phone, tablet, to any device, big screen TV, whoever you want to watch that event. Just do it with PPV.com. Should be great out in Vegas. I haven't really thought about Vegas yet because I'm in the midst of a crazy fight week here in New York. You're about to head out to Fresno, California. This is how boxing is, Chris. It's like it's out there. It's like I see it in the peripheral, Pacquiao in Vegas, but I'm here in New York and you're about to be in California.
I know you're going to get this. I love when people ask me, what are you doing on this date? And it could be like 3 weeks away. I'm like, 3 weeks. I mean, fuck, that's forever.
Could be anywhere. Could be in another continent. Oh,
3 weeks. I mean, this is boxing. 3 weeks is a lifetime. So yeah, no, it's one foot in front of the other in this industry. And it's one foot in front of the other. And you got to keep your head on a swivel at all times because things change at breakneck speed. You have to be a certain breed to be in boxing. There's no question about it.
Bro, I'm not trying to complain because I love this job. But last week I was in Anaheim for Jake Paul Chavez. That card was huge. Doing a bunch of content with them. Run over, have 4th of July weekend to kind of catch your breath a little bit. Then we have this fight week in New York where, you know, I hosted the event at the Oculus in World Trade Center, which was probably the coolest event and the coolest venue you'll ever see for a boxing thing. That thing, me and Corey Erdman, that was so cool. Doing this whole fight week, we got the ring event on Saturday in Queens. Got this Netflix, Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano Friday night. Then we're heading out to Vegas. My bags aren't even unpacked from California. But that's just how we live, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm packing right now. I'm out for 10 days straight. Two different events. 10 days straight, dude. I leave tomorrow. I leave today. Ooh, I leave in a couple hours, and I'm gone until after Pacquiao. So
what's the I was gonna text you about some health tips, How are we going to survive the Vegas? Like, I need hydration. I need a Chris Algieri like hack.
All right. So here's what you do. Get one of those daily vitamin things like your grandma has.
Yeah.
My mom daily has those. Monday, Tuesday, yeah. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Yeah. Have one morning and one night.
What about morning one?
So your morning one is going to be like your basic multivitamin, vitamin okay. C, mm-hmm. Some zinc. Your night one is going to be, because listen, when we're on these trips, we have some booze sometimes. So you have your recovery stuff, your NAD, you have your milk thistle, more vitamin C, more zinc. Then you get your Viagra. Sleep stuff, magnesium. Then there's a third box, not third pill box. That's for one. Cocaine. That's for Viagra. That's for Molly.
Yeah. I could probably get that in Vegas. I think we're good.
Guys, don't do drugs. We're kidding. This is all a joke, except for the supplements are real.
Yeah, I'm trying to survive out in Vegas. And
I think I'm going to post that. I'm going to post my supplement stack for Vegas.
No, that's a great. I think people out here will love to hear it when they're on the road for several days, or they're on the road and they want to keep their health kick going or keep their routine going as much as they can, because you can really veer off. Like to me, I'll just drink coffee. I'll just drink a bunch of coffees, and then you're super dehydrated and you feel like complete ass, and then my interviews suck.
Yep. And you look like shit, and your eyes look crazy, and you're just looking ragged. That's how Vegas is. But that ain't happening to us this time. That ain't happening. I'm staying on top of it. I bring an air purifier. I bring an air humidifier for the room because Vegas is so damn dry.
I'm
going in, dude.
All right, so we got a busy week's coming up. Let's get into this fight week. We'll start with the Netflix, Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano, for their third fight. Out here all week. I was hanging out with Serrano yesterday in her locker room. She is very, very relaxed. She's very, very ready to get that win, ready to get into that win column. It's an unbelievable card. It's going to set a Guinness World Record for most titles on the line in one event. 17 belts will be on the line, all women's card. Alicia Bumgarner's on it. Chantel Cameron, Shadeja Green, Savannah Marshall, Ellie Scottney. Just go up and down the list. It's like pretty much any women fighter worth a damn. Besides Clarissa Shields. I don't know. that's a whole nother story, isn't on this card, but Taylor Serrano headlines it. It's their third fight. The first two obviously went to Katie Taylor, but razor thin. I'm just wondering how Serrano will come out in this fight, what she can do differently, because I don't think Taylor really has to change much. It's what adjustments Serrano will make in this fight. I would think she would try to box a little more because she had success in the second fight when she boxed more.
Yeah, she did, but she had to throw so many punches in that second fight. It was like ridiculous output and volume. I don't think either one of them are going to make too many adjustments. I think these ladies could fight 100 times. They're all going to look the same. I just think that I think, you know, because Serrano is the favorite going into this fight. I think she finally does get the nod, but I don't think it's going to be any different than the other. Because I think the last two could have gone either way. They were all just like razor thin because they're both so good, so evenly matched. And at this stages of the career, I just think they're both super, super close in their abilities. But I just think Amanda's a little more fresh. I think Katie's longer career, I think she's got a little more worse for wear throughout her career. So I think Amanda's just going to be a little bit fresher. So I don't expect a lot of tactical adjustments from either lady.
How about this, Chris? In their first two fights, they have combined to throw 2,268 punches. They have landed 863.
800 twos.
10 twos.
10 rounds, two minutes.
800 of those punches, power shots.
Okay. So let's put it this way. 10 twos, that's 20 minutes of action. They fought two times, that's 40 minutes of action. They've landed 800 punches in 40 minutes of action. That's a heavy bag workout. That's crazy.
But 860 total connects, 800 of them power shots. They don't jab.
Yeah, they
60 jabs. But
I mean, Amanda comes at you so much, she forces you to fight. Like you basically just have to abandon the jab because she hits so hard too. It's another thing. It's like, all right, we're gonna go jab for your straight left hand. No, I gotta punch with you. Amanda forces you to fight and kind of abandon your jab. Amanda actually has a good jab. She just would rather get square and just bang with you. But I've been in fights like that. When I fought Jose Peralta, like I'm a jabber, but like he was in my grill the whole time and throwing bombs. I was like, all right, I just got to punch with you. Ended up throwing more punches than I've ever thrown in my career. So when you have someone who's pushing the action, yeah, it forces you to kind of ban the jab and just go to numbers.
Okay, so the second fight, she landed 46 jabs, 46 of 256. Taylor doesn't jab at all, 9 of 108. That's the second fight. And I thought that Serrano won the second fight more clearly. If there was any definitive in the first two fights, the first fight could have been a draw, very close.
I thought Serrano. The first one was a draw.
Exactly. Second fight, I thought this Serrano won this fight. And I'm like, okay, well, what's the difference? It's that she actually jabbed. She 46 of 256. Mm-hmm. If you go to the first fight, they land, she 2 of 150. Two jabs landed the entire fight. Two. Taylor landed one. That's absurd.
So Taylor has landed 10 jabs in two fights.
Yes.
She landed nine.
And she's won both fights.
And she's won both fights. But dude, this is why when we get women fights at this level, you can't do 2 minutes. The 2 minutes, it just takes the sweet science out of it. It becomes rock'em sock'em. They have to bang. They have to fill every second of every round.
Yeah.
And it's not fair. It's not fair to the ladies how good they really are.
Well, Amanda Serrano won a 3 minute round. She's fought 3 minute rounds numerous times. That's the only time these two got contentious in how many events have they done? Endless press conferences. Yeah. Face-offs, blah, blah, blah.
At this point, 6, 7, 8, 9 of them probably. You know,
yeah.
With each other, yeah.
So they do the press conference to set up the fight. It was like a couple months ago. And that's the only time that they were actually talking trash and there was some animosity because apparently there was a handshake agreement after the second fight. Handshake agreement in boxing means nothing. But there was a handshake agreement where if we fight a third time, it will be 12 threes. Katie Taylor shook on it. And apparently she reneged on it. And I don't blame Katie whatsoever because 2 minutes suits her better. I don't blame Katie Taylor at all because she won both fights. She is not getting top billing on this card in New York. It's Amanda that's coming. Amanda's getting the treatment of a superstar, which she is. She's more popular than Katie Taylor here in the States. And it's run by MVP, which is Amanda's promoter. But Katie gave up a lot. she gave up a lot. You know, fighters have egos. I don't think she has much of an ego, as you can tell, because she gave up a lot of things in this promotion that fighters wouldn't. But one thing that she was steadfast on is, like, this will be 10-2s.
Yeah, I mean, if you give up all that other ground, I get it. You know, she's sticking to it. But also, like, this is the sport. It's also weird because they are, it's a trilogy. To make the third one different rule set would I think, would affect the trilogy in and of itself. So, because then you're just going to be like, oh, well, if it was twos, she would have won, you know, depending on how it goes. But yeah, I don't think you can change it midstream. But listen, I understand where Amanda's coming from. It's like, oh, you shook on this. But now you're pulling back on it. But I think that's a smart tactical decision by Taylor.
WBC is the only organization that has not sanctioned the 3-minute rounds.
Right.
That's right. You know, Serrano's actually given up belts because they wouldn't do it. So maybe that plays into it. The fact that, you know, WBC belts are on the line. This is an undisputed fight. Katie Taylor has all the belts. Maybe that played into it, but
I don't blame her. She doesn't want to give up one of her belts. WBC is a big one.
The big green one. Everyone loves the big green one. The odds on this fight, you're right. Amanda Serrano is a -180 favorite despite losing the first two fights. Katie Taylor, you get her on the money line at +140. That's good value. Over under is set at 8.5. I don't see this being an early night. I think it will go all 10 rounds. Katie Taylor by knockout +1800. That just shows you that that's unlikely. Katie Taylor by decision, +165, plus money for Katie Taylor to win again. That's very interesting line. Amanda Serrano by knockout, +600. Amanda Serrano by decision, -105. Some interesting, interesting lines.
Vegas is predicting a Serrano decision.
Yes.
I guess they're seeing what I'm seeing, that Amanda seems to be fresher. These wars are wearing. Katie's been in a lot of wars, and she's gone the distance too. So she got a lot of rounds under her belt. Serrano has a lot of fights. She has way more fights, but she has scored a lot of knockouts, especially early on, and hasn't been in too many wars until recently. Katie's been battling her whole
tooth
career,
and nail,
tooth and nail, her entire career. Plus those trips to the Olympics, man. Those are wear on you too. So. Interesting. So what's the are we doing bets now? Or are we gonna do it? We're gonna wait for later. What would be
no,
the smart
do it now.
Bet? You're the betting man. What's the smart bet?
The smart bet is Serrano by decision, -105. It's still a decent number. I mean, it's still minus money, but like you can make a good amount of money if you're willing to put up a lot. I think Serrano's gonna get the decision.
Yeah, I do too.
But Taylor by decision too.
Yeah,
+165.
So, listen, we pretty much, I mean, I can't really say that in this fight. You normally, you'd be like, oh, it's definitely going to the decision. It might not. So, really, and again, these ladies are so evenly matched. We're going to get another barn burner back and forth, super razor thin. Katie could get it again. So, like, that wouldn't be a terrible bet. Katie could get it again.
I think there needs to be, like, a knockdown. Like, Serrano has hurt Taylor in both fights, but she has not had a knockdown. What would be great would be a knockout, like a definitive win. And I would probably come from Serrano more likely than Taylor. A definitive win for Serrano would be something, but she just has a problem finishing. Like she's hurting a lot of her opponents lately. Yeah. Besides her, the last couple, I think she had a knockout recently and she got a stoppage there. But when she's stepping up against like the top talent the last couple of years, she hasn't been able to get the stoppage. She's been able to
hurt
her opponents.
3-minute rounds. I don't think she stopped anyone in those 3-minute round fights.
No.
Which you would think would help her get the knockouts, but it definitely didn't.
I don't know how much that experiment, like that's like a talking point for the 3 minutes, but like Katie has said, like 3 minutes doesn't necessarily guarantee a knockout. If anything, it could make for a more boring fight. She's saying I like the pace.
That's the big argument for the 3-minute rounds.
Yeah. So, yeah, Serrano decision -105. If you're gonna like, if you've Taylor decision +165, it's pretty much a pick 'em. It's whatever you think. It's definitely gonna be a decision, and it's whoever you believe is the fresher. You're gonna get decent value on this one.
You know what that sounds like to me, Dan?
A hedge?
Sounds like Chris Algieri will not be betting on that match, on that fight.
Hey, I don't want to bet on it. I just want to enjoy it.
I will not be betting on that fight.
Yeah, I'm going to be there ringside, and just going to try to enjoy it. This happens a lot to me when I gamble on like the Knicks or gamble on the Yankees, is I end up not enjoying the game. I end up like, if I have a prop bet.
It's the life of a degenerate. That's what
I'm not that bad, bro. But if I have like a prop bet, I remember Knicks games. I had like prop bets on like OG and Obi to score like 15, 20 points. And I'm just watching him the whole time. Like, why aren't they passing him the ball? Now he's out of the game. Oh, great. And I'm like, next thing you know, the Knicks are up by 15, 20, and I don't even care because I lost my bet.
Dan's like, the next thing you know, you're putting vodka in your orange juice. It's 9 a.m.
You're dodging calls from bookies. No, we're good. Use DraftKings. You don't need to use bookies. So that's that fight. I was in the locker room surrounding yesterday, and it was really cool just to hang out with that team. They're very confident, and she's absolutely jacked out of her mind, Amanda Serrano. She looks ready. And I was asking her, and I was like, I heard you want to go back down to 126. She's like, yeah. She's like, I don't like being 140. She's like, I feel fat. I was like, okay, you're not fat, number one. She goes, I feel too like big, like 120. She's like, I just like being 126. I don't like being 140, which is crazy. You know,
it's crazy how she jumps all over the scale, like all over every weight class. Like, to be that talented and hit that hard that she could fight anywhere between 126 and 140 is nuts.
Yeah. So that's the big one, Madison Square Garden, the third and what could be final fight. There was a media question yesterday. Katie Taylor, would you fight a fourth time if Amanda won? And she was like, oh, I guess. But like, I don't know. I think this is it. I think this is it. I think this is the last one. You can't be just keep going and going and going until like we get an even number. I think.
I mean, you can, as long as you keep making money. Like, you never, this is money that's not coming any other way.
Yeah, this is. Women's boxing is different than men's boxing in a lot of different ways in the business. The way it's set up financially and the way it's up business-wise is like, this is why we're getting a third fight, because it makes money, and there aren't a lot of other options for these two to make this type of money out there. Do you see there's a $250,000 bonus that was announced yesterday?
I like that.
That was cool. I didn't know about that. And Nikisa goes up on the stage and announces it. And I'm up on the backstage. And when he announced it, I looked around at all the girls' faces. They were like, what? Because that's more than some women making their entire careers. Like,
put together more than most female champions will make in their entire career put together.
Yes.
Plus 250.
Even someone like Alicia Baumgartner, who's made a pretty decent amount of money, she was pretty excited for that. Like, if I win, I'll invest it. They were asking the fighters what they'll do with it, which I thought was a really cool thing. So shout out to MVP for putting on this card. Netflix, too. Netflix, man, they are really into this stuff, man. Their budget is awesome. Crazy. Yeah. That Oculus event, first, I don't think they'll ever do anything like that again. It looked and sounded like an absolute logistical nightmare. They almost shut it down because there were too many people watching. Yeah, there were people. I was calling the fights with Corey, and there were people like up on the, like, it's a three level subway station. There were people up in the roof watching down.
I saw that. Yeah,
bro. And they started it at 5 p.m which is peak rush hour time, because it is a subway station to get to and from, to get home to New Jersey and everything. So at 5 o'clock they start the workout, and they're right, we're gonna do that first sanctioned fight, a real four round fight at 5, which it was probably like a perfect storm of people, because you have everyone coming and going at the highest peak of rush hour and a live fight. So everyone stopped. And that's when like the agencies, the Port Authority was like, there are too many people standing here. So they had to like space it out. They had to like put some lulls in the action so people would just leave. So therefore me and Corey had to do like an hour of fill, which
a lot of fill.
Yeah. Luckily I talk boxing every two times a week, and I was like, oh, Phil, that's fine. Like, and Urban's unreal at that.
It's so funny to me when we're this little inside boxing, that's why it's called Inside Boxing Live here. When we're on the mic and then we get in the truck, they're like, all right, we gotta fill fix it. And then they're always like freaking out. They're like, oh yeah. Guys, and then like I'm always like, I'm with, you know, with Paulie or with when I'm with Urban or whatever, I'm just like, yeah, dude, we talk boxing all day long. We can do it. It's no problem. There's plenty to talk about.
All the producers and Netflix people came up to me after, like, oh my God. They're like, you, we were worried about the fill, but like you guys just rocked it out. I was like, yo, thanks, man. Like this is like what I enjoy doing.
Literally what we do.
Yeah. So that was cool.
You guys think you could talk about boxing for the next 10 minutes?
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, I have a lot more in the chamber too. Yeah, so it's been an awesome event here in New York with this Netflix. They are really into it, and they are going to be carrying Kenella Crawford, so that they have a huge budget. They spare no expense there. They go all out. Alicia Bumgarner fighting on this card as well. She's fighting Jennifer Miranda. Miranda from Spain. Bumgarner, undisputed champion at 130 pounds. Just saw that she weighed in at the limit there, and she's getting back into the ring. And she's MVP's big signing. Serrano is talking about retiring. She mentioned it to me yesterday that she wants to fight maybe one or two more times, once in Puerto Rico and go off to the sunset. Katie Taylor's 39. MVP signed a slew of women fighters, but Alicia Bumgarner has the highest ceiling and the most potential star power. This could be her chance, and this is now her reintroduction back to the boxing world, because in 2022-2023, she was a huge star, and then she fell off, some self-inflicted wounds, PED accusations that she cleared her name on. But this could be the Bumgarner show in the next couple of years when it comes to women's boxing.
Yeah, I mean, she's a very exciting style. She's really, really sharp, good boxer puncher. She scores knockouts even at a high level. You know, she's got the look, she's got the talk, she's got the style. Yeah, she could be the... And how old is she? She's 30. Got some time, too. Yeah, man, she's in her prime of her life right now. Lisa Bumgarner is going to be around for a while. There's some big fights and a lot of money to be made.
She's got a lot of aura too. She got a lot of confidence. She does not lack confidence. She can talk on the mic. She's got that power. We'll see if she still has the power, because that's what made her like really transcend. Was she knocks out Terry Harper, and then she has that contentious fight with Michaela Mayer that she wins. But the buildup to that was huge. And then, you know, she really maximized social media. Like, she was on Instagram heavy, and she's very attractive. And she played the game very well, and she built up a ton of followers and a ton of interest outside of boxing. Like, you know, I see her at Lions games. They bring her onto the sidelines, and she when she was living in Detroit, she's got a ton of marketability. So we have to see. It could all go change if Jennifer Miranda goes in there and upsets her. So that could change real fast. But she's a -2500 favorite in this fight.
Whoa.
Yeah. Jennifer Miranda is from Spain. She's never fought outside of Spain. She was on a Netflix show. A hit Netflix show over in Spain. I don't know if that will help her in the ring. Bumgarner, I don't think so. Bumgarner to the stoppage, +165. Bumgarner by decision, -200. So that's the co-main event. We got Chantel Cameron, who hasn't even landed yet, which I found insane. She wasn't at the presser. Didn't land yet. I find that interesting. Find Jessica Mara. Shadasia Green versus Savannah Marshall, I think, will be a banger. Ellie Scottney's on this card, who has pound for pound potential. This is an awesome card. So everyone tune in on Netflix and support this event. And we'll get a huge main event with Taylor and Serrano. I mean, I think we're both going Serrano decision. Right? At least you. I am as well. All right, let's head over to the other card in New York, right down the street from where I am.
Still
a great one. Ring card, ring three. Yeah,
it's a very good card.
This card
I'm picking on you for your use of word, your choice of words.
I got nothing else. That's not no. I have no beef, man. Don't make up a beef that doesn't have to be there. I like everyone at the ring, and they're putting on great cards. Jake Paul met with Turkey. Speaking of the ring, what that means, I don't know. He also retweeted it and said, I want to collab with Turkey. MVP is all about collabing and disrupting. Turkey's a big disruptor. Big time change in his philosophy from calling Turkey everything under the sun, and also saying, I'm not I'm my own boss. I'm not a pawn. So we'll see how that all plays out. I asked Jake about Turkey yesterday, and this is before they had a meeting. And I asked, "What do you think Turkey will be in boxing in 5 years?" And he said, "Yes." Didn't have anything bad to say about him. I did not know that they met. We'll see how that plays out. I think Jake and Turkey could mean we get the KSI fight. It could mean a Tommy Fury fight gets made. I think that's what it essentially means, is that if Jake wants to get some of these big fights, could it be a Canelo fight? It could be all three.
I could see all three. And I think that's kind of the order it should go in, too. I think you should fight either KSI or Tommy Fury next. That Tommy Fury fight has to happen. I think it's a big fight. I think it's a marketable fight. I think it's a good fight, too. I think Jake's gotten better since they fought. Tommy hasn't done much since then, but it's a, I think it's a good fight. It's an interesting fight. And then listen, the Canelo fight's probably going to happen, guys. I know it's, you know, stab me in my eyes, but it's probably going to happen sooner than later. But it's just, that's boxing, baby.
Yeah. That's wild. That's a lot of money to made for Jake. And that's why you take these meetings with Turkey, because it's dollars.
You're not going to deny the bags of money that are getting thrown around. Like this is happening right now. Will it keep happening? Who knows? But this is when it's boxing, you got to strike where the iron is hot. We've had a big influx of money over the last decade or so. You know, first it was like PBC. They came in and there was tons of money. And then Matchroom came in with that $1 billion deal and there was tons of money. And now Turkey's come in and there's another influx of money. So you got to take advantage of them while you can. I wish I was still around to grab it, because I grabbed money in the PBC and the Matchroom influx. So there's opportunities out there for fighters and promoters and managers and everyone. It's just, you know, it's like rising tides, you know, raises all ships. So there's money for everybody out there. And literally from the journeyman opponents up to the promoters are all making money.
So the only holdout remains Gervonta Davis.
And the only, I don't think that's going to last either.
He's the only one that has not taken a photo with Turkey. Jake Paul, add him to the list. Obviously Canelo and every fighter in between. It's De La Hoya, Gervonta,
Canelo, Bud.
Everyone. Everyone. I mean, PBC, every promoter has Joshua. Sent fighters. Every promoter has sent fighters to Saudi. Every promoter has sent their fighters onto Riyadh cards, whether they're here in the States. Gervonta Davis is the only holdout. So we'll see how that plays out. We'll see how this Jake Paul thing plays out. It's just one little aspect of it. But let's get into the card. It's headlined by Edgar Berlanga versus Hamzat Shiraz at 168 pounds. Berlanga is coming off of that embarrassing KO win over the guy who had an ankle bracelet still on. Came fresh out of prison. that we learned nothing in that fight for Berlanga. Obviously, before that was the Canelo loss. Shiraz had that win over Amo, but then also had a uninspiring draw with Carlos Adames. He's now moving up to a new weight class. Like this fight, it's like we've talked about this in the past. It's like we kind of can't believe both guys are taking this fight.
Yeah, it's a dangerous fight for both guys. I like the fight a lot, especially the buildup. You put these two guys in a room and it's like, it's electric. You got two guys who are polar opposites. You got Shiraz. He's got his British accent. He's very well-spoken. He's cool,
regal,
collected. He's wearing his suits, his three-piece suits. He looks good. His hair is done. And then you got Berlanga, you know, leaning over. The weight of his chains are hanging over his neck and he's got his you know, streetwear on. He's cursing and saying all this nasty stuff and grabbing his balls. I love it. I mean, they're going back and forth in such a weird way. The dichotomy between these two is awesome. So that just, it gets me excited. But also, they're both very good fighters. I really like Shiraz. I was touting him as the next middleweight until that Adames fight. And I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and blame, one, the weight, and two, that Carlos Adames is extremely, extremely underrated. I think Carlos Adames is very good.
Yeah, he also had a hand injury, Shiraz.
Right. So hand injury, you know, the weight was obviously an issue. You know, he's gigantic for that weight. He's big for 68 too. So I was touting him really, really high. And Berlanga, man, he's come a long way. And, you know, I think the Canelo loss has given him a lot of self-confidence. When you got a guy who can punch like he can punch and he's got that technique and he's gone 12. He understands what it's like to be in that kind of condition, how hard he has to train for these fights. I think he's an improving fighter as well. So this is a good crossroads fight.
Well, Chris, if there's people out there that don't believe what you just said about Berlanga, because there's a lot, this is the fight where we're going to see for both guys. We're going to see what Berlanga's made of, because I think this is his second best opponent he's ever faced besides Canelo Alvarez. We're going to see what Shiraz is made of, because we listed up like what you could deem as excuses. Wasn't in the right weight class, you know, facing a tough opponent, stepped up, also had an injury. So we're going to see what Shiraz is all about, because I don't see many, like, what he can say afterwards if he doesn't have a good performance against Berlanga. He can't say, oh, I was at the wrong weight. No, like, you're at a higher weight class. You should be healed. You should be better than Berlanga, because on paper, you have more skills. You're the favorite, minus 135. But this fight is going to tell a lot about both guys, and that's what makes it intriguing. On top of the, you know, the stuff outside the ring, like the promotion and everything that Berlanga brings as one of the boxing's biggest heels. Shiraz, no one really knows anything about him, but we know that Turkey desperately wants to put him in big fights, and they're talking about him potentially facing Canelo one day. So there's a lot on the line here. Berlanga wants to get Canelo again. I don't see that happening, but there are still huge fights for Berlanga, whether it's one of the Charlos, whether it's anyone at 168, which there's a ton of good fights out there for him. Really good fight. Shiraz is minus 135. Berlanga plus 110. Berlanga by stoppage plus 260. Berlanga by decision plus 350. So those are huge numbers for Berlanga to even get a decision, which is usually you get that at minus money. Shiraz plus 270 knockout. Shiraz decision plus 200.
Interesting. So it's a really, really tight.
It's really all plus money for every type of I don't know where I lean in this one. Like, money line, you got Shiraz minus 135. It's like Berlanga's the bigger puncher, but I think Shiraz should have the better overall boxing. Like, Shiraz's decision is jumping up out at me, and you can get that at plus 200. Maybe parlay it, get it a little higher with another fight. What are you thinking?
I like the bigger guy, the guy who's more comfortable at the weight, because Shiraz is moving up. This is his first fight at 168. And Berlanga is one of the biggest 68 pounders, if not the biggest 68 pounder in the world. Like, he's a plus, he's 200 plus. He is a huge guy, and he can punch, and he's got fast hands. And I think he's taking this fight very seriously. I still don't think he knocks Shiraz out. I think we get a distance fight. I'm leaning Berlanga decision.
Berlanga decision, you get that at plus 350. It's a big number. That would be something. If Berlanga can get a 12-round decision over a really good opponent, there's going to be a lot of people eating crow, and there's going to be a lot of people, like, or some people excited about Berlanga. So that should be a good one. That's the main event. Then we got Shakur Stevenson, William Zepeda. I'm really looking forward to this fight. This fight has been talked about for years now. Zepeda coming off of some up-and-down fights with Tevin Farmer. Shakur had that win over Josh Padley, was supposed to be Floyd Schofield. And we know about Shakur and all the nonsense he's had to put up with during this promotion, where it seems like the organizers of this event are out to get him, which I just find extremely odd. And I hope that stops, because the shrinking ring, Coppinger inserting himself into this, I don't know, man, it's fucking weird. Why has this become a thing?
We live in a cringe culture, and social media makes that worse. It exacerbates this whole idea of, like, gotchas and cringe gotchas, and just, like, I don't know, just being the heel and negativity. I don't know. It's gross. It's bled into our sport. We used to be a really regal sport and kind of avoided all that stuff, but we're here now. It's 2025.
But don't you find, like, if you were Shakur, you're a fighter. If you were, the organizers were like, you kind of had, like, Shakur's style. Like, you were not a knockout guy. Yeah. Like, you had to depend on moving. You threw a lot more punches, and you landed a lot more shots. Like, you pull up your stats. Like, you were technically looked at as a boxer. So, if you were in today's world right now at age 28, 29, 30, like, this discussion about runners, discussion about moving, like, they would probably lump you into that. So say you were fighting on this card, and you have Turkey saying, we're going to make the ring shrink for Chris Algieri. We're going to make a smaller ring. You have Coppinger tweeting that, I hope he steps into the ring and actually fights. It becomes a narrative in the event. Like, they're posting stuff about Coppinger. Like, you got Shakur giving double birds to Coppinger. I don't know. I've seen a lot of different ways to promote fights. This is a new one for me, where, like, they're, like, kind of throwing shade at one of their brightest stars.
Yeah, people got to understand, and this might be a hard concept to grasp from the outside looking in, but narratives matter. I remember going into the Amir Khan fight, and I just come off a poor performance against Pacquiao, where I got knocked down. Well, I I mean, they counted six knockdowns, but a bunch of slips that were counted as knockdowns. But regardless, he dropped me, and he dropped me hard a couple times. And, you know, we're going into that fight, and Amir Khan's telling everybody, I'm going to knock him out one round. You thought Pacquiao couldn't get him out of there. I'm going to get him out of there doing one round. And everyone's talking about Amir Khan's hand speed and his power and all this. And I'm a runner, and he's going to track me down. Boom. The fight happens. I go right at him. I hurt him immediately. You know, throughout the entire fight, the only guy who got hurt all night was him. I didn't get hurt at all. But the narrative was he was this big puncher and I couldn't punch, and that, you know, he was going on to fight Floyd Mayweather. Was it a close fight? Absolutely. One of those judges had that fight not even close. Like he made a scorecard before he even got to the ring. So narratives matter, and it affects the fans. It affects the judges. It affects the people viewing. I remember everybody in that room in the Barclays, a lot of Amir Khan's, even friends and fans, were like, oh, Chris won. But that's not the narrative that was pushed up until that. So it was kind of, you got to be careful, you know, in terms of laying the groundwork before the event happens. And it's a shame, because Shakur is one of the best fighters in the world. And we're trying to make a fan base that's smarter and understands the nuances of the sweet science more, not just the guys who are going to come forward and get decisions because they're being aggressive. I'm not a big fan of that movement. But listen, it's up to Shakur to go out there and put on those blazing skills.
Yeah. We're seeing repercussions from the May 2nd. That's why I think the May 2nd was the biggest story of boxing, because of the half year. This is a direct correlation, a direct repercussions from that May 2nd event, because they did not make they organized it and it looked terrible. And now Turkey's been leading the brigade here with the Tom and Jerry stuff. And now they have a guy in Shakur who's technically known to put on some stinkers here and there. Sorry, we're going to make him kind of the face of this Tom and Jerry movement. And we're going to make him, or we'll try to force him into a firefight, or try to force him into a style that he's not 100% comfortable with, because we want to create a really good fight. And we want to create a really good memory for boxing fans. I get that. It's just odd how it's all playing out. It plays into Zepeda's hands perfectly, because, I mean, it should on paper. I don't think Shakur's going to come out and fight any differently. Yeah. I think
Shakur's not going to bite at all.
No, he shouldn't either. And Zepeda... Right, exactly. My point is Zepeda... His style is going to allow Shakur to have a lot of openings. That should be that. That's what's going to play out in this fight. It's not going to be Shakur doing anything different. It's not going to be a shrinking ring, because that's not the case. It's not going to be a smaller ring, because it's actually still a 21 foot ring. It's going to be Zepeda having to come forward and try to engage, or Zepeda not wanting to engage because he's getting picked off, and then Shakur closing the distance. Ultimately, Shakur's going to win this fight. It's just a matter of how.
I've always liked this fight, because I thought Zepeda had the ability to make Shakur actually work harder and actually will make it an exciting fight, but Shakur is going to win regardless. If this turns into a boring fight, it's Zepeda's fault, because he's going to be gun-shy because he's getting countered so much. It's not going to be the other way around. The fight won't be boring because Zepeda's running, because he doesn't run. He'll stand in front of you, make you miss. He'll counter you. He'll disrupt you. He'll tag you here and there. He'll control the space, control you. If this fight's boring, it's because Zepeda has made that agreement, that silent agreement that, you know what, you got this one. I'm not gonna go for it. I'm just gonna sit here on the outside and, you know, have a staring contest. It's gonna be tough, because Shakur is gonna be blamed for it either way.
Right. That's honestly the narrative on him. Talk about narratives, right?
Yep.
The narrative on it. It's just like he almost have to have like a cold knockout, which is not gonna ever happen with him. For him to just kind of turn the tide on what everyone thinks about him. But if he goes out in 12-0s, Zepeda, he hurts him kind of like he did in the Valdez fight. I think he can get a lot of people off of his back, because I think that he is one of boxing's biggest stars. He is. And good or bad.
For sure.
Biggest talent. There's massive fights with him. Gervonta Davis waiting out there. Who knows what happened to him. But they're big fights for Shakur. I do really like this fight a lot, and I want to see what Zepeda can bring, because he throws 100 punches around. I mean, he's the number one leader in punches thrown per round on average in all of boxing.
I can't wait to go over the numbers after this fight and see if he can get anywhere near that.
Yeah, my guess is it's going to be chopped down to about 50.
Yeah.
Because we've seen this quite often. Remember Charlo versus Castaño? Castaño came in as a 85 punch guy, and I was like, this guy's a machine. he's going to take this fight to Charlo. Charlo was the counterpuncher with great power, threw about 35 punches around. Castaño started strong and then adjusted and then was rested in like the 45-50 range in terms of punches thrown because he just couldn't handle the power coming back at him. Well, not that Shakur has power, but he's just going to make you miss.
Counterpunches, though. Counterpunches will make you keep your hands in your pocket.
Yep.
If every time your hands leave home, you get clipped, your hands start to leave home less and less. So that's why I'm curious to see what those numbers look like after the fight.
Other numbers are the odds. Shakur Stevenson, -1200. So Vegas really believing in Shakur Stevenson. Shakur by decision, -200. Zepeda by decision, +2200. What?
What? Yikes.
Like, Zepeda doesn't have, like, I mean, he has the accumulation. Like, he's never stopped guys. Oh, he had a couple body shots, but he'll break you down.
He had a nice little run there where he looked like he had some good pop and good power. And even in the beginning of both Tevin Farmer fights, like, he was, like, unloading and landing good shots, and it seemed like he was going to wear Tevin down. He just didn't. But I think at the world-class level, I don't think that power really translates.
Zepeda by KO or stoppage, +1000. So Vegas does not believe in William Zepeda. They saw those 22 rounds with Farmer. They see how good Shakur is, defensive wizard Shakur, top two or three best defenders in all of boxing. It's him and Bivol at the top. So,
yeah, 23-0 versus 33-0. That's a hell of a record versus record right there.
It's an awesome fight. I mean, it stylistically, it has the makings of what could be a really exciting fight. It all comes down to Zepeda and partially down to Shakur if he's willing to engage more, which we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on him. It's a lot of experiments in this fight. A lot of experiments, like, will Shakur listen to all this out-of-the-ring stuff? Because we are human. We are human, right? You guys are human. You guys hear that stuff, you fighters. And, you know, you got the promoter going at him. You got the reporters going at him. You got fans going at him.
Yeah. One thing about Shakur, he'll clap back on Twitter, but when it's fight night, he does Shakur things. He goes out there and he's smart. He doesn't take the risk. He doesn't need to. He wins the moments. He wins the rounds. He wins the fights. Mm-hmm. He'll get it loose. He'll get loose on loosey goosey on Twitter, but on fight night, he's tight as a drum.
A fight on this card that not a lot of people have talked about. It has completely fallen through the cracks. Alberto Puello versus Subriel Matias. This is at 140 pounds, title fight. Puello, yeah, really good fight. Puello has had a string of really good wins. Matias has come back from some losses to get back into a big fight. He obviously has that crazy knockout power and one of the highest KO percentages. That's Matias. Puello, more of a boxer. So another good stylistic matchup. Get right into the odds. Matias +100. This is the closest odds you'll see in boxing. -125 for Puello, +100 for Matias. So Puello is only a slight favorite in this fight.
Very slight. Yeah, it's a good fight, and it's a meaningful fight for 140. You know, you've got a former champion going against the current champion, former champion being Matias, current champion Puello. It's a good style matchup too. You know, because Subriel Matias, literally, he is just a seek and destroy puncher. He is coming at you with two-fisted aggression. He can be outboxed. We saw it against Liam Paro, also in a southpaw. And Puello, who looked amazing against Gary Russell, you know, was able to – I was really impressed with that. I mean, he boxed well. He was able to offset the athleticism, the power, the speed, everything. Very close fight, but still, I had Puello winning that fight. If he can do that with Matias, he should get the win, which is why he's a slight favorite. But it's tough, man. Spending 12 rounds with Matias is no easy task.
Well, especially like how good Antoine Russell looked in his next fight.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a massive win for Puello. And that really
I was impressed during the fight because of what I saw. But then, yes, in hindsight, it's really, really impressive.
Right, Matias had the loss to Paro, which kind of pumped the brakes on the boogeyman discussion for him. But, you know, I would not be shocked if Matias went in there and found some power late. Matias by stoppage, +180. Plus odds for a knockout artist.
Right.
Plus 180. How about late? I would like to see late fight props. Round props. Here we go. On the fly. This is good radio. Puelo, round 7 through 12. To stop. No, I'm sorry. Matias through. Where is it? What the frig is it? Matias in round 7 through 12.
He's not a great reader either. I know his speaking isn't wonderful, but his reading's not great either.
Matias, 7 through 12, plus 350.
Damn.
To stop him late.
That would be if you're looking for a bet, that's the bet. 7 through 12 late stoppage. Matias has late power. He breaks guys down. 7 through 12 it is, cuz he scored an 8 round knockout his last fight.
7 through 12.
Yeah.
Has Matias ever been stopped? Has Puelo ever been stopped?
No, he's never lost. He's undefeated.
That's good. Good job, Chris.
I don't even think he's been down.
All right. So yeah, makes me pause a little bit, but gambling is all about gambling.
It says he's 5'9". He says he's 5'9". He seems way taller than that.
Yeah, he's a big 5'9". He's big. Like, he's like, when I see him in the ring,
big,
I'm like, this
long,
guy must
wide.
Be.
Yeah.
He must be a freaking nightmare to deal with.
Yes, yes. And he's like, he's very tricky. He's a disruptor. He's very savvy. Ultimately, my pick is Puelo by decision. But if I'm a betting man, I'm going late stoppage Matias. Because that's good.
Puelo,
good enough.
Yeah. Puelo decision, plus 150. Still getting good odds on that.
Oh, that's plus money too?
You can work out a pretty healthy parlay here with decisions. Like Katie Taylor. If you parlayed Taylor decision, Puelo decision, not Shakur, avoid that one. You can get a pretty nice parlay here. There's a lot of parlay opportunities this weekend. I'll have to play around with the app. Finally, this last fight. I don't know what the heck is going on here. I've been really involved with the Netflix Katie Taylor Serrano fight. I've been following this at a distance. David Morrell. And Iman Katayev. Is it happening? Is it not happening? Because it's not listed. It's been taken down from DraftKings. That's because Iman Katayev has a PED ban from the International Testing Agency. He has a 2-year ban, but apparently he's still able to fight. It dates back to a 2020, early 2023 test. There are so many strange oddities about this story. Like, I think he's fighting. I hit up a few people that are involved with this card, and they didn't give me a concrete answer. I have no idea. It's very boxing right here. Are you looking it up too? Because I can't find a damn thing on it.
I haven't nothing up to date. You know, I sent you the picture of the social media post of him being banned, and they took
banned
away four.
Would mean you can't fight,
right? That would mean that, but it was created by a social media content creator. So they're taking four of his wins off his record because of he won these fights during the time when he would be banned, which I don't know how that works because you make money when you fight. And if you're taking those off and while you're banned, you were fighting a retroactive ban. I don't know. What are
David Morrell says he feels bad for his opponent, Iman Katayev, receiving a 2-year ban from the ITA for anti-doping violation. Katayev will still be fighting the former 2-division world champion. This was posted yesterday.
So what? The 2-year ban is time served while you're active. Let's talk about this. I commit a crime, and I get 2 years prison time, but I got caught later. And for a crime I did in 2023, but I've been out the whole time working, making money, living my life. And then they go retroactively. You've been in prison for the last 2 years. But
no,
you've been
you didn't
out.
Serve any
no,
time.
Exactly. Exactly. There's no time served. How the hell does that work?
They took the crime or the punishment taking the fights off of, the wins off of his. Because I think a fighter would sign up for that anytime, any day. Like, he's still able, if you're still able to fight in this card, he's probably going to make the most money he's ever made in this upcoming fight with Morrell.
How about the money that was made in those fights over those 2 years?
I mean, I could have hit up my lawyer, Leon Margulis, who represents Morrell. He probably wouldn't give me a straight answer. He'd probably give me some lawyer talk.
Probably still too hot right now.
They're a little too hot. So if they do fight, it's going to be awesome because Katia was a knockout artist. But like now I think differently of him because he's legitimately been banned. And then Morel, we saw what he could do. Gave Benavidez fits early and late. Yeah, I don't know what to make of this fight. It has a big cloud hanging over it.
Yeah, I heard that like Morel was in a tough fight. Like this guy Katiev is no joke. But yeah, this does change things a little bit. But
I don't have any odds. I have nothing to say. I have no odds.
Selfishly, I'm like, oh, I hope the fight still happens because I think it should be a good fight. And I like David Morel, but also like as a fighter and as a person in the sport and someone who cares about the safety of fighters, I'm like, well, if this guy's cheating, then you know, and are we sure that he's clean now? Because really, we're never sure when guys are clean, even when they pass the test. So, yeah, I don't know. That's a tough one.
Speaking of that, Chris, Francisco Rodriguez, remember him? He had a record-breaking win over Galal Yafai, returned an adverse VADA test for their fight 2 weeks ago, which saw Francisco Rodriguez break the flyweight record for punches landed in a fight in 575 punches. He didn't get tired. He didn't take a step back the entire fight. Now it turns out it's an adverse test. It's a difference.
What it was for? What drug?
I don't know exactly what drug, but I know that adverse, it's all about words, right? Terms.
No bueno.
It's not a failed test yet. It's different terminology. It's most likely going to be a failed test, but it's not 100%. It's not like the Munguia situation where it's like banned substance or... It's an adverse test. They're going to test it again, but it's most likely that this guy was on something when he beat Yafai. Not just beat him, like a career-altering defeat. And it makes you sick. It makes you real sick to your stomach if this comes out true, that this guy was on something and he changed the course of Yafai's career.
It kind of goes to something that Eddie Hearn was saying, though. He was like, this guy's not world-class, so obviously, you know, Yafai should beat guys like this. But if the guy is on, he's a super version of himself, you know, it was a pretty harsh term, you know, terms in terms of what Eddie was saying. He's like, oh, this guy's not world class. He beat Yafai. You know, maybe Yafai's not the guy that we thought he was. Hey, but listen, this guy potentially was using. So now he got a super version of that guy. Yeah. Eddie wasn't that far off. You know, it was mean at the time, but now it might make sense.
Well, and another thing too, it's Francisco Rodriguez is a Eddie Reynoso fighter. This is now like six or seven fighters. And Solo de Bella tweets him. He said, if it's a coincidence, it's usually, you know, a lot of coincidences. Usually then we have a pattern. That's, you can't deny that.
The crazy thing about the Eddie Reynoso thing in that camp, like, because I was thinking, I was like, maybe they have, you know, their food supplier, maybe they have like food delivered to the gym, maybe it's the water or something, but like they're all failing for different things. So it's not related to one thing, you know, accidental, you know, ingestion in, you know, in the gym itself or some supplement that they're all taking or whatever. No, they're all different things. That's not a good sign.
Yeah, it's not good at all. And he's going to come under fire because he trains the most popular fighter in the boxer in the world, in Canelo. So there's going to be a lot of questions, and rightfully so. You should be asked those questions one or two, and then you would say, okay, that's weird. Seven failed drug tests coming out of the same trainer. I don't know. I don't want to get sued, so I'm not going to say anything too crazy here, but you can use the... you can read between the lines, everyone. So that is going to be an unbelievable fight weekend. Friday on Netflix, Saturday on DAZN pay-per-view. Big fights up and down. We'll be back on Monday. Right? Monday you'll be back? Monday.
I won't be back, but I'll be in Vegas. I'll be in the MGM.
So you're going from Fresno, Florida, Fresno, Vegas.
Florida, Fresno, Vegas. Yeah, Sunday morning I'll be in Vegas, and then Sunday to Sunday, which means by Sunday I may actually just be a shell of myself. I certainly will be a shell of myself, but I may never come back. I might never be the same person. I might be a completely different guy.
Jeez, bro. Yeah, I guess Monday we'll have a recap show of this weekend's crazy fights. Chris should be in rare form.
Yeah, I'm doing a, we're doing a, I think we're doing a watch along Friday night from the hotel from the casino in Fresno, me, Paulie, and Jimmy Smith on Friday for the ladies. And then Saturday, I think we're doing a post reaction real late after the ring card. So lots of work, a lot of content creation.
Never ends, bro. Never friggin' ends. I said after Pacquiao, I was like, all right, I'm gonna like just float in the pool, maybe go to Montauk out in Long Island. And just like
No, you're not. We are, yeah, dude. Bro. We are working the following weekend. We got the last ESPN show in New York. Xander Zayas fighting for a world title. I'm on the card. I'm going to be in town. We're going to go.
Oh, wait. Yeah, stuff. You're calling that, right?
Yeah, we got to go. We got to make content.
Steak review coming.
Steak review, and we got to actually. We're going to unveil our gloves in Vegas. So we got.
I have it right.
You have it right there.
Don't show it. Oh, unveil in Vegas.
Don't show it.
There you go.
Don't show it. We're gonna unveil it in Vegas, guys. Woo! We got gloves.
Yeah, we got gloves. I'm gonna have to start fighting now. That's the only.
No, you're not.
That's a hard no from Chris Algieri.
Hard no.
All right,
no,
everybody.
We don't fight anymore. We're not fighting. I'm not fighting anymore. You're not starting to fight.
We'll see you on Monday for a recap episode for what should be a crazy weekend in boxing. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of DMs. We're out.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.